Hi, I'm Tara Lynn of Geek Saga Entertainment, and welcome to Hot D Takes. This podcast series covers HBO's House of the Dragon episode by episode with myself, an avid reader of all things ASWAF, and my friend Manny, a Game of Thrones fan who is unsullied, aka has never read the books, being your stalwart hosts. So first things first, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at A Geek Saga.
And I'm Manny, the aforementioned unsullied co-host. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Benissimo Art. Thanks for joining us for this episode, which will cover House of the Dragon, Season 2, Episode 2, titled Rhaenyra the Cruel.
0 out of 10 Targ eyebrows.
Yeah, that is just way out of place, man.
Okay, as a reminder, expect spoilers from the episode we're covering. But less obvious, there will be very minimal book spoilers from Fire and Blood, which is, of course, the source material for House of the Dragon. We'll start with an episode summary, then cover what we think are the main hot takes from the episode, and conclude with an episode-specific favorites roundup.
We also have a rating system that we will, like true Targaryens, fill in when and where we please, or if at all. And that system includes rating things on a scale of 1 to 10 1 to 10 Targ eyebrows, and sometimes half eyebrows.
That's the Arg eyebrow.
That's the Arg.
Oh, just one last piece of business before we dig in. Don't forget that Geek Saga Entertainment has a Patreon with 10 tiers ranging from $1 a month to $40 a month. It offers tons of ways to support us and receive some great perks in return, including early access to these Hot D Takes podcast episodes. Usually I release them to Patreon about 24 hours, if not a little bit more, before they go public. But also, if you are at the $5 level or above, you get these unedited video recordings from us very soon after we record. So in this case, you get to see my face without any makeup, which like literally never happens when I record podcasts. So just say it.
Yep.
Worth it. You can check it out at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.
And now it's time for the long and the short of it, our weekly episode summary.
Well, everyone, as you can imagine, things are a bit hectic in the Red Keep just now, with everyone present being yanked from bed or wherever else they might have been in the middle of the night and herded into questioning. Very ungently, of course. However, even all of those servants and maesters and guests and whomever else is present aren't being treated as roughly as Viserys's poor Lego or Erector or Warhammer build, because Babygon goes into get wrecked mode on it. His rage is eventually directed elsewhere, though, because of course they call an emergency small council meeting, and he does not like that not everyone agrees with him that this is Def Rhaenyra and they need to do something about her ASAP. But then somehow seems to like it even less when good old Otto gives him some good old suggestions on how to use his son's death to further their cause against Rhaenyra. Oh, baby gone. But hey, at least baby gone gets to bow out of the funeral procession that Otto insists on staging. Only Allison and Helena have to suffer through that rigmarole because, of course, the small folk should only see their gentle sorrow. And while Allison and Helena are enduring that awful showcase, the assassin, deemed Blood, is doing everything in his power to avoid any suffering of his own. Because it turns out he was caught pretty much immediately and gives up every bit of information he can to avoid being tortured. Don't worry, though. Baby Gon gets his revenge in the end, and not just on Blood. Because while he didn't know the name of the rat catcher who assisted him, how much does that really matter when Aegon can just hang all of the rat catchers? An act that totally won't ever come back to haunt him. Honestly, though, we can't put all the annoyance on Baby Gon here. Not when Sir Cole of House Slaw is around to abuse his fellow Kingsguard, Arik, over a dirty cloak and the fact that his brother, Eric, serves Rhaenyra. And then demand that Arik sneak into Dragonstone, pose as his twin, and kill Rhaenyra. Cool, 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 cool. Speaking of Rhaenyra, she does unfortunately look pretty bad right now, thanks to Otto's insistence that she basically be publicly blamed and shamed for Jaehaerys's death. Even her own council members don't seem quite certain that she's innocent, though first Rhaenys and then Rhaenyra herself catch on pretty quickly that Daemon had something to do with it. He soon admits to sending Blood and Cheese to kill Aemon, but he also insists that his instructions were clear and nothing he said should have led to this outcome. Rhaenyra is kind of more than a little bit done with believing him, though, even admitting she never really totally trusted him in the first place. Oof. So it sounds like Daemon is off to do his own thing for who knows how long, while Rhaenyra desperately tries to clean up the mess he essentially made. This includes confronting Missarya, who gave Daemon the information he needed to hire Blood and Cheese. Not to mention Rhaenyra knowing that Missarya once helped good ol' Otto as well. Still, Missarya obviously says some of the right things, because in the end, Rhaenyra keeps Daemon's promise to set her free. Although, free involves sending her to Essos, because Rhaenyra isn't about to just trust the so-called White Worm.
At least she just didn't take her head right there or something. For a second, I thought she was going to like let her go, and then, all right, guards, go kill her as soon as she leaves. Anyway, we'll get into that later. And now, an interstitial, because we can't neglect to mention the somewhat awkward side character scenes thrown into this episode. First, brothers Alan and Adam of Hull are reunited. Though while Adam is excited that Alan might have some prospects with Slash because of Corlys, Alan himself wants to stay out of things. We also see Hugh, the very same Smith who asked Aegon for money just last week. Again, he's worried about his sick son and his wife's tales of how hard it's getting to find proper food. But it seems that they aren't in a place to do anything about any of that, even if they wanted to. Anyway, back in King's Landing, Aemon is basking in some weird, possibly pseudo-Oedipal relationship with Madame Sylvie, who used to take care of Babygon, but apparently has moved on to the older-looking brother, while Babygon himself is still vacillating between taking charge in kind of the worst ways, including removing Otto as a Hand of the King and putting Coleslaw in his place, and sobbing in corners. Wonder which reaction he'll have when he hears about Sir Arik failing to kill Rhaenyra, because, yep, he did in fact go to Dragonstone and successfully impersonated his twin long enough to get into Rhaenyra's chambers, but was foiled in the end, leading to a heart-wrenching duel with Sir Arik. And while Arik might have won in the sense that he was able to save our queen, a lot was lost as well, because having to kill his twin was clearly too much for him to bear. The question remains, will news of the assassination attempt and or Aegon killing a bunch of innocent rat catchers be enough for Rhaenyra to win back any support you might have lost? I guess we'll have to wait and see. And in the meantime, let's get to our hot takes for this episode.
Hot take number one, Babygon declares war on his dead dad's toys. And yes, I do mean both that model of old Valeria and Otto Hightower.
Exactly. Like both of the dad's toys.
And honestly, like, I guess if you replace the word toys with things or loved ones or prized possessions, maybe you could even kind of include Rhaenyra, I suppose.
You could. He was just angry. He just wanted.
Yeah. As much as I hate to say it, I don't blame him. I mean, and I hate to say it because, ugh, baby gone. But
yeah,
a lot of what he's going through and doing so far this season is a little bit more palatable slash makes him more understandable.
Don't fall into the propaganda. Don't do it.
I'm trying so hard, man. I really am. RIP to that model. I did see, though, that was not the original one. They made a copy for him to destroy. I'm blanking on the actor's name who plays Aegon, but he did it in one take. They had one take to do this because they only made the second copy for obvious reasons. That's like a whole fuck ton of work. But I like that they didn't destroy the original for a lot of reasons. That is just really cool and reminders of our king. But also, like, really kudos to the actor for being able to do that in one take. And it came out amazing, honestly, as it was seeing him take that sword, which might have been Blackfyre, which is an important sword. I know you don't really know that, but it is an important sword in the, like, whole series. But yeah, so, like, really kudos to him. He did a really great job with that scene, particularly knowing he only had the one shot at it.
Yeah, there was a lot of passion in it, you know, like he really laid into it. There was a lot of anger there, you know, like, I don't know. It's like, did he just not like his dad? Does he hate the fact that his dad wanted Rhaenyra to be? But then it doesn't make sense there, because apparently he's the one who's, I think he just hated his dad because his dad produced Rhaenyra and he was just letting out aggression on that. But I felt like that was like aggression towards his dad because of
did Rhaenyra. You? I don't know that I felt that way. I totally understand why one would feel that way. And I also think that you're probably correct, because obviously later in the episode he feels some things about anybody closely connected with his father, which we'll get into a bit more in a later hot take. But for this one too, when I kind of made the joke he's waging war on his dad's toys, and it's not just the model, it's also Otto, because, you know, then he goes into that small council meeting and he hates everything Otto is saying.
Yeah, he really had it in for him, which was weird. But that's what made this scene a good start off, because I was watching it and I was like, okay, like, why are you breaking this? Number one, it was your dad's. And then I'm like, well, Rhaenyra is the older one. He clearly liked Rhaenyra or whatever. So I don't know. I don't know what his aggression was aside from just breaking shit, you know, but
I do think you're right. I would not be surprised at all if some of it was supposed to be against his father. And then we've already had the conversations where it's like, oh, well, Otto was your dad's hand, like, and your dad was kind of weak, maybe. Or do you want to keep Otto around? But as much as I totally understand Aegon also kind of waging war on Otto, and that I'm like, well, maybe not on Otto directly, but for sure on all of Otto's suggestions in that small council meeting. And even though Otto was being kind of gross, because he was like, oh yeah, like, your kid's dead, but some good may come of it.
I mean, it's gross, but it's like, Otto in the end is a tactician, and that's what he's doing here. Because he understands now that now the war can really go in their favor, right? Because you killing babies, that's a big no-no pretty much in any realm, right? So this is one of those things that Otto was right with it, you know, and it's just like, yeah, like, we could use this as baby gone, you know, God bless his heart. If it would have been my kid, I would have burnt every single area and everything, you know what I'm saying? But
well, and two, like, when Otto suggests that they have the procession with the dead child in the care, like, in the open carriage, and it's like, ah, man, I honestly, oh, I again hate to say it, but I did really feel for Baby Gon, like, not wanting his dead son paraded through the streets. He really, like, thankfully we got those kind of moments with him and Jaehaerys in the first episode that at least made us see, like, okay, he likes his kids, right? He wants to be around them. He, and I know some of it, he was, oh, well, he's going to be king someday, but I think he also just wanted to play with his kids a little bit. So we got that in the first episode that did, maybe is Team Green propaganda, but also, listen, some people are terrible people to, like, others, but that doesn't mean they're not necessarily good parents. It doesn't necessarily mean they hate their kids or are mistreating their children. And oh God, I hate it. So I hate so much that I'm saying anything positive about Aegon, but at the same time, I totally felt for him in that moment when he was like, no, I don't want my dead son paraded through the streets. But again, like you said, Otto, tactician, and his good old Otto's good old suggestions were unfortunately actually good suggestions.
They were good suggestions, yeah. He knows how to turn the tide and he knows how to win the war, really, you know, and it's to the people. And since everybody's kind of 50-50, really, when it comes to them trying to get people, trying to get banners on their side, it seems like every time they talk about it, it's always like a 50-50 thing. Well, some people, they're not sure. They don't know if they want to get involved. Well, guess what? We just paraded Baby Gon's dead baby through the streets with the grieving mom and the grieving grandma, right? I mean, if that doesn't get people to turn in their direction, and that's where, to me, it's like, as much as I hate Otto, if I was a Team Green person, I would have definitely have agreed with him and been like, yeah, absolutely do that.
Well, actually, that really, since we're talking about the procession anyway, that leads us right into hot take number two.
The procession of gentle sorrows. This whole thing is a fucking hot mess, dude.
Yeah, that body in the mirror. Dude. I don't know if you've ever watched the Twilight movies, but it's been like a meme and a thing. People making fun of how weird the baby Renesmee looked in, I think it's only the last movie that she's in, but she does. She looks fucking, it's like this weird, like, they, I think they used a real kid, but like, then they also like did some CGI on her face. I don't remember. I don't like the Twilight movies enough to recall, but yeah, the body that they, and I know there was a real child who played Jaehaerys. And I actually saw like a backstage like set picture of the child who plays Jaehaerys with the guys who played Blood and Cheese. And they're all like grinning, you know, and so it's like, maybe that is that actual child laying,
I don't know,
pretending to sleep. But it just, even if it was, it was like that precious, perfect baby face that like only some kids have. And then on top of that, the obviously fake white targ hair, white targ wig. And it just like, no, I don't like the way this looks, guys. I don't. No. I mean, thankfully we never have to see it again, but it was weird looking.
It was like Uncanny Valley. I felt like it was one of those latex type of dolls, but they just made it look a little too realistic. And it's like your brain, it's like you look at it and you're like, I don't know. And your brain is like, no, danger, you know? And then like with the stitching on the neck and stuff like that, it was just really unsettling is what it was. I didn't like it. But on a more serious note, poor Helena, man. she's out there with these people and like, yeah, it's great. She has to be out there and she's doing her thing. She clearly does not want to be out there. I mean, she literally is having a panic attack in the middle of it when the little carriage thing gets stuck in the ditch or whatever. And it's like, you can see she's just like freaking out. She just wants to like fucking disappear, man. Mm-hmm. I felt so bad for her.
Yeah, she is. Well, first of all, Helena is a pure cinnamon roll and just literally does not deserve any of this. Let's be real. Nor should she have had to deal with this particularly while Aegon gets to just run around screaming and pouting and torturing people. And I'm not saying she would want to do any of those things, but he's doing whatever he wants while she's being forced to, you know, live through this. Obviously, she's an introvert, but even beyond that, she definitely made it very clear she doesn't want to be around people she doesn't know. And I don't think that's just a here and now thing. I think that was a before thing too. But then we're adding on the additional like PTSD from what just happened to her. Obviously, the Smogfolk are, I don't want to say cheering for her, but they're calling for her. They feel for her. Mm-hmm. They're prostrating themselves on the ground in sorrow for her. And, you know, there's that guy who's like cursing Rhaenyra and all of this stuff is like pro Helena, but she's a mom who wouldn't have wanted to do this in the best of times. And now she's being forced to do it literally right after the death of her child that she, in a way, had a hand in. And I don't mean that. You know what I mean? She pointed to a kid. Listen, like, we know that she didn't really have a hand in it, but she believes she did. It's very
and the real kicker of that is like when she gets back and then like Baby Gone is walking past her, they kind of stop and kind of look at each other for a minute. Like, bro, comfort your wife, bro. She just had to go through all this stuff, had to be out there. You got to smash things, you know, you got to play smash and you know, okay, you're just breaking everything. Like, dude, it would have been good if there was just like a moment of comfort in there, even if it was just for like a few seconds, but he just kind of stops, looks at her and then it's just like, oh, by the way, okay, well, bye. I'm going to go do whatever. I'm going to go kill some rat catchers or whatever. You know, I'm going to go bash someone's head in. That whole scene with her, man, I just felt that.
Honestly, I got to say, not looking forward to, and I'm just saying this from like a general perspective, I can't, things are not going to get better for her, obviously. Aegon is no help. Allison is, and I will say this for Allison, when Otto said something, oh my gosh, the poor boy, whatever. And Allison was like, he's dead. His pain is ended. But what they did to my daughter is still here, still has to deal with it. Like, and Allison broke down over like the pain that her daughter is feeling. And it's like, again, fucking, honestly, you can't even call that Team Green propaganda. That was very real. And
that was very real. Yeah.
I just wish that Allison had taken those feelings and used them to protect her daughter and not made her do this thing that she really didn't want to do.
I agree with that completely.
Hot take number three.
Here we go, guys.
Soiled cloaks. LOLOL. But also not in regards to Sir Cole of House Slott having figuratively soiled his cloak in a way worse manner and taking out him feeling shitty about himself on Sir Arik, whose cloak is literally dirty after having to march through the streets with Jaehaerys's body. This poor dude. And he's like, man, I just wanted to eat some breakfast. I've been up for like however many hours straight. Mm-hmm. I will clean this as soon as possible. I just really needed to get some food in me. He just wanted a fucking meal, man. And he was going to clean his cloak right after. But stupid Coleslaw, in his bad mood that he created for himself, needed an excuse to go after someone else. I think like anybody who is human has been in this position, right? Where you are in a bad mood and you take it out on somebody else. We're all fucking human. I don't think I know anybody who hasn't ever done that in their entire life. But there's a difference between I'm in a bad mood, so I'm going to be like snippy with somebody, and I'm in a bad mood, so I'm going to accuse this guy of being a traitor because his brother is off serving Rhaenyra, even though Arik himself has done nothing to show that he isn't doing his job and isn't loyal to Aegon, to Team Green, essentially. Poor Sir Arik. Again, he's really been loyal to Aegon. He even tries to remind Coleslaw that the Kingsguard, they are sworn to serve forthrightly, not to traffic in deception, is what he said. Mm-hmm. But nothing that Sir Arik has done or is saying matters because Coleslaw be sawing.
Coleslaw, he was not just in a bad mood. The guy was fucking guilty for what he fucking did. He feels fucking guilty because he's one of these fucking, I don't even know what to fucking classify this asshole as anymore. And he just feels good. So he's like, I'm just going to take it out on someone else. And you're right. We've all been in bad moods. We've been snippy. I've done things like this in the past. Absolutely. No, this is someone else trying to hide behind, you know, he's trying to hide his transgressions behind a dirty piece of cloth on someone else's fucking armor. Piece of shit. Zero respect for that guy.
You're saying it better than I am. To be honest, I think I was trying to avoid the whole narcissist be narcissizing.
Mm-hmm.
Coleslaw flying.
he slawed pretty hard in this one. So.
Like, I was trying to avoid saying that because I didn't want to go off on a tangent about personal stuff. So I'm going to try to like rein myself in here. But yes, that's really what it is. A person feels guilty for the shitty thing they did, so they accuse the other person of doing the thing they did, which, to be fair, I guess this isn't quite that, because Kristen Cole isn't a traitor to Baby Gone or anything like that. But you're right. Narcissist be narcissizing. Exactly. I know that's not a word, by the way, guys. I know that's not a word.
It is now.
It's like sort of equal to coleslaw slawing. I don't know.
Coleslaw be slawing. When you hear that, you know what we're talking about. Yeah. Think.
Is that our new term? Like our new
That's our new term.
New
yes.
term for this season.
Coleslaw's got a slaw, baby. Anytime we see a narcissist, that's how it is from now
on. Oh my God. You and me as like friends in person are actually going to be using this term.
Yeah. And people are going to be like, wow, these kids are crazy these days. Listen to their lingity, you know?
Let's make it big on TikTok.
Yeah.
Exactly. It'll be the new like Riz or whatever the fuck that shit is.
The Riz or whatever. Exactly.
Oh my God. Okay. But yeah, I did like what they did with this scene. Also, I got to say, when they first start having the conversation and then Sir Cole over here, he starts in on Arik about his brother.
Mm-hmm.
And all the other guards in the room just like pick up their shit and leave.
And they leave. Yep. They wanted no part of that.
Yeah. It was like a very like modern, honestly, it felt very 90s teen movie to me.
That's exactly what it felt. When people start getting into a fight or like one of those jailhouse fights you know, everyone's like, oh, I'm getting out of here. You know, I don't want any part of this.
Well,
you ready? Hot take number 4 on this week's Dear Viserys. Chapter 1. Here's how Daemon and Otto really feel about you. Daemon, despite the nice brotherly moments in season 1, we now know how Daemon really felt. And on top of that, how he feels about Rhaenyra being named heir. A tool to put him in his place. Wowie, wow, 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 wow. Okay, so this I was really torn on because I get it and it's believable. But to me, it's almost a little bit of a retcon. And maybe it's not. Maybe it's just, this is just like who he was. Maybe in my brain, it's like a retcon. When I felt about Daemon and the things that we saw, like him placing the crown on his brother's head and the way he was, he just seemed like, okay, there's more to this guy. He's more dynamic. And this takes that away from that. Now it's like, oh no, wait a minute. He was just an asshole from the beginning. Psych. So I don't know how I feel about it. I was a little torn on this one.
I think it's a little bit of both. Yeah. I think there was definitely some love there. And I think that with everything, and I'm not excusing Daemon right now. I'm not excusing anything he's done. I'm not excusing the way he talked to Rhaenyra in this scene. None of that. But what I'm saying is, like, I think you can love a sibling and still be, I mean, really, you can do this with anybody, but particularly with family, right? You know, they always say friends are the family you choose. Well, the whole point of that is you can't choose your family. You can love your family because of your history with them and because of the good things you like about them. And you can also be frustrated, angry, whatever, with your family when they are acting in ways that go against the things that you personally believe in, which of course you can do that with any person. But again, for sure, you can walk away from your family too. It's a lot easier to walk away from friends than it is to walk away from family. It really is. And I'm not saying that Daemon necessarily ever wanted to walk away from his brother, but I think some of this is pent up stuff that he's always felt. Some of it is anger and frustration at the current situation. It does undermine some of the brotherly moments we saw in season 1, particularly the crown thing or whatever. But at the same time, it's more like hurtful, I think, because we like Viserys so much as viewers. And I've never been a big Daemon fan or Daemon stan or whatever, ever, particularly not from the books, honestly. But it makes it a lot harder to like stomach him for sure, too.
It does. And I think that's the part that I just didn't like about it. I get it. It was really the natural progression of his character. You know, we kind of all knew that this is the person he was, but I feel like all the good times kind of made us kind of put those feelings aside and say, no, see, but he's like, but that was the thing that I liked so much about his character is that he came off at first, right? Like, like, oh, here we go. This guy's going to be a fucking problem. But he was so dynamic and there was so much depth to him. And now I feel like with this, we're pulling back that depth now to where it's like, no, he kind of just always was this two-dimensional character. And it's like, but no, but you just made him this three-dimensional character. We all loved him, you know, or like at least tolerated him or at least understood the method to his madness. At least that much. But now he's out there trying to kill Aegon, which makes sense. That would have probably been the same move that I would have done. I would have been
trying to kill Aemond?
Aemond. I always say Aegon where it's Aemond. I think it's just muscle memory at this point. But when he devises that plan, like to go kill Aemond, like, yeah, that's probably the same move I would have made, honestly. But then the fact that he's just like, oh, well, just, yeah, kill anyone after that. And they kill a baby right on top of it. And the motherfucker just doesn't fucking care.
Yeah. He feels like, very like mustache twirling villain so far this season. Ooh. To the point where he's literally sitting in Rhaenyra's small council meeting, like leaning back in his chair with this like smirk on his face. And Rhaeny sees it. She knows immediately he has something.
She knew immediately. You see her just side eyeing him. Like, and I love her so much. Like she just knows it. She's just on top of everything, you know? And I was just like, man, somebody knows what you did in here.
Doesn't take Rhaenyra long to figure it out either. Though she thankfully at least like waits until they're in private to confront him about it. God, his shit talking about Viserys, like you said, dear Viserys, here's how Daemon really feels about you. Like, you were weak. You did this just to spite him, et cetera, et cetera. And he's also obviously shitting on Rhaenyra in that scene too, which is...
Yeah, because she's going to like rule the kingdom in the same way he did without shedding blood. So what was the problem? Having a peaceful kingdom is a problem? Like, we have to kill people? We have to be at war? Like,
well, I mean, and I suppose in this case, they kind of don't really have a choice.
Now they don't have a choice.
Yeah. And
certainly don't know.
Continuing on, here's how Otto really felt about Viserys. This one was, I don't know which was more surprising, Daemon going off or Otto...
Otto going in the opposite direction.
I think it was Daemon going off was more surprising, honestly.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. No, I'm lying. That's not right. It was Otto. I'm not super surprised that Daemon talked a little bit of shit. I am surprised at the extent to which he did it. Mm-hmm. But that's why I think Otto is more surprising, because Otto always seems so like exasperated with Viserys, which Daemon did too. But Daemon would just go off and do his own thing and be like, fuck all. But with Otto, like you said, he's a tactician and he reined himself in, I think, a lot with Viserys. Mm-hmm. For sure, he reined himself in with Viserys way more than he's doing with Aegon. Yeah, like as much as I don't really like Otto, he made a lot of sense a lot of times in this episode. And I literally cannot believe I'm saying this, but when he went on about Viserys and all the good ways, which again was such a far cry from how Daemon was talking about Viserys earlier in the episode. Yes, perhaps more Team Green propaganda, but also like he's talking about like how kind Viserys was and how like dignified he was. And he's not wrong in any of those things.
No, because so
he's basically like Daemon focused on all the quote unquote bad characteristics and Otto focused on all the good ones. And God, fucking Team Green propaganda.
And this is the thing too, right? Is that when Otto was saying that, that was adding to his character. Mm-hmm. We just got things taken away from Daemon's character. And now Otto, they're adding to it. It made me think, I'm like, you know what, man? Otto and Viserys were friends. It wasn't just that he was the hand of the king and all this stuff. You can tell that they had like a friendly relationship. And now you're kind of seeing him kind of reminiscing about his friend. Not that it's the king. Like, yeah, he's saying it as the king. But it came off as someone talking about their friend who passed away. And that's when I was like, fuck you, man. Propaganda machine. That propaganda machine, toot toot, it's fucking going, man. It was full effect, full speed at that point, man.
Listen, I do see what they're doing here, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I know what they're doing. I'm guessing you might still be in the same boat, but I am still in the boat of like, these writers are fucking great. They know what they're doing. Like, they pushed Team Black on us in season one. Now they're trying to push Team Green on us. But listen, like, you make me loyal to one thing. It's real fucking hard to get me to change my loyalty, particularly when you've got Daemon. Listen, I wasn't loyal to Daemon, okay? I was loyal to Rhaenyra.
Yeah.
So...
look, they're doing that thing that we'll eventually talk about in our other podcast with Battlestar Galactica. When they put Guy's Baltar on trial, we all wanted to see Guy's Baltar fly out of an airlock. We're like, dude, we're ready for this episode. This is what we've been waiting for years. Yeah. And then Apollo gets up there and makes you feel like complete shit. And you're like, oh my God, he's fucking right. I am an asshole. You know, and I feel like that's what's building up right now with these writers is, you know, is that they're trying to get us to... It's not that they're really trying to create people for the other side. It's that They're trying to bring the pendulum back into the center is what they're trying to do it and make it as gray as possible, as opposed to it just, you know, when season one was done. I mean, dude, this was a black and white issue, right? That's it. And now they're like trying to rein that in and just bring us back in the middle. And I don't know, make us into reasonable people, I guess, as opposed to just cheerleaders.
All right, I'm going to move on to hot take number 5, in which I almost want to ship Rhaenyra and Missaria. The scene between the two of them was really interesting. The way Rhaenyra was looking at her, I guess it was supposed to be her just like recognizing Missaria. But I don't know, guys, I am here for them possibly hooking up, honestly. Although the conclusion of their first conversation was weird, because Missaria was going on about how she sort of built this network and tried to raise herself up and then realized she would never be accepted, especially by, you know, men like Otto and Daemon. And then Rhaenyra just is like, how did you get that scar? And then just dismisses her. I was like, okay.
That was weird.
I just feel like if they were going to do that, then maybe they should have, and maybe I missed something, but I did watch like the previously on, and usually they'll hint at stuff, right? And I don't recall them hinting at like anything about Missaria having that scar. Please, like if anybody's listening to this and I missed something, definitely hit me up, because I would love to know if I'm missing something. But yeah, it was just a really, they were having a really intense and interesting conversation. And then, you know, Missaria says some really like poignant things about herself, her past, and her realizations that led her to where she is today. And then Rhaenyra's like, how'd you get that scar? Bye. Granted, Rhaenyra does, she calls her back. She says, you know, I'm going to honor my family's word and release you. You're not totally free. You have to go to Essos. So you have to go exactly where I'm sending you or whatever.
Yep.
I'm not an idiot. Like, I don't trust you necessarily, but Missaria's leaving. Missaria is walking down to the boat. She sees Sir Arik and obviously has this like, moment. I don't know if she's actually like got gone here or if she did anything about what she saw, because there's also no explanation as far as I could tell about how Sir Arik knew to burst into Rhaenyra's chambers and knew that his brother was, you know what I mean? So I'm hoping that Missaria did something and isn't just gone. I mean, if she is, it is what it is. But also, like, I don't want my hope of Rhaenyra and Missaria having a little bit of a thing.
That would be
to
nice.
Go away.
I don't know. When it comes to whether she had intervened or anything like that, because, you know, we're talking about how he's in there and then you see him show up for the battle as Rhaenyra is getting attacked. So then you think, oh, well, you know, maybe Missaria said something and said, hey, I see these people. I don't think that happened personally, because Arik was already kind of paranoid, you can tell, you know, when he was walking around, you see him kind of kept stopping, like he knew something was up. Because that one, I was like, at first, like, oh, she must have gone back and like said something like, hey, but I don't think that happened. I think she was just letting the chips fall where they may.
I think they left it a little bit open, maybe on purpose. At least that's what I'm hoping, because like, again, they really focus on her doing that double take. And she is clearly like, whoa, wait a minute. And it's not out of character for her to just keep walking after the fact. It does not explain how Sir Arik eventually showed up in Rhaenyra's chambers. Just out of the blue. It really doesn't. There were the handmaiden girl, Alinda. She ran for a different person and Sir Arik came back before she came back. Could the servant have run into, or handmaiden, whatever she was, have run into Sir Arik first? Sure. But I don't think she did. She ran a complete opposite. She ran up like the back stairs and Sir Arik burst into the main door. I feel like either it was some weird twin energy.
Yeah, exactly. There was some kind of intuition there that was like, oh, something's up.
Yeah. Or it was Missaria saying something, and I would rather it be the latter, because again, I don't want my hopes of some sort of ship between Rhaenyra and Missaria. And again, like I know that that look Rhaenyra was giving her was more of a like a, I recognize you, because Missaria literally is like, oh, you recognize me now. But also, who knows where Daemon's gone or how long he's gone for. And I think we have seen Rhaenyra have some queer tendencies. So.
And I think the thing that made them so recognizable to each other, I think, before she actually recognized her, is that they're just both victims of Daemon. You know, at this point, Rhaenyra knows, like, wow, this guy has been fucking me. He's a piece of shit. So does Missaria now. So now they're talking to each other and they're talking about this stuff. And she just realizes it. We both know each other one way or another, right? Because we're both fucking victims of this fucking guy.
I don't know. We'll have to see. I have hopes.
Hot take number 6. Of course, I get this one. Take off that badge, bitch. Aemon fires good old Otto and promotes fucking coleslaw to Hand of the Fucking King. Could my blood pressure get any fucking higher when I was watching this scene? I was like, dude, of course. Of fucking course. But don't worry, though. Otto gets in a good jab at the end.
Otto getting in that jab. What it is Aemon has just told him to take off his badge. And I was like, you aren't actually doing this. And Aemon's like, sorry. Wow. Aegon. Now you've got me doing the opposite.
You doing it now?
You ruined it. Now I'm doing it. God damn. What happens is Aegon orders Otto to take off the badge. And Otto's like, nah, you're not really going to do this. And Aegon is like, fuck yeah, I am. And this is when I think Otto kind of goes into his, oh, your dad, he was dignified. He was great, etc. And then he's saying he was right about you. He means Viserys was right about Aegon. And Aegon says, he made me king. And Otto's like, it's not even a laugh. The subtitles actually said Otto chuckles. I don't even know if chuckle is the right word. Imagine the most sarcastic laugh you can have. I guess he wouldn't giggle. Otto wouldn't giggle, but that's what I like imagine is like a giggle. Like,
yep.
And he says, is that what you think? Of course, Otto knows that Aegon was never meant to be king. But this is the first, like, for sure, outright just admission of, I know this is not what Viserys wanted. Yep. From his lips, this is the first time he said that in front of Alicent and Aegon. Because when Alicent ran to him after Viserys died, he didn't say shit like that. Nope. But he clearly never believed her about Viserys saying what she wanted to have heard him saying. I wonder if Baby Gon is just going to like brush that shoulder off, or if this is going to be like, I got 99 problems and my dad not wanting to be king is one.
It's one of them. Exactly. Knowing him, this,
wait, were those two Jay-Z references back to back?
Back to back. Exactly.
I am a child of the 90s, y'all.
Yeah, man. I think this is one of those things that's, I don't know if it's going to simmer so much, but I think it's going to make him a more violent king is what it's going to do, because he's going to feel like he's better than.
Or maybe like he's not better than, but he needs to be.
He needs to be, or he needs to be more memorable, or I don't know. I just want one of those moments like with Joffrey saying he's king, you know, and then he gets slapped in the face. That's what needs to happen to Baby Gon.
This was the good old Otto version of that. Let's be real.
It really was, you know, because he cuts with his brain.
I also think that while I understand the comparison of Baby Gon to Joffrey, I do think that he's older and he is not quite as.
No, he's not ruthless like the way Joffrey was. And, you know, in the last episode showed that, where he was just more of like a normal person, you know, and it was the first time that Baby Gon came off to me as just a normal guy, especially that scene in that last episode where he's hanging out with his friends. And he's just they're talking, and then you start thinking, you're like, wow, you know, this guy is a young guy, he has friends, and he's just a normal person like the rest of us. He just has an Iron Throne to sit on or whatever, you know,
like, he seems to care about his kids, etc., etc.
exactly.
But then, like, I don't know, Aegon's saying like that fucking coleslaw over here, he's basically like, coleslaw be slawing and I be loving it.
Yep.
I don't know. Usually narcissists don't like each other. So that is an interesting thing. But maybe Aegon, maybe Baby Gon, like to say he's a narcissist might be, that actually might be incorrect.
Let me just put in a quote here that came from a philosopher. I can't remember his name, from long ago. And this is how I feel about it. It goes like this. Fuck Cole. Fuck that piece of shit and his fucking face hole, and I can't wait until he gets fucking dismembered or thrown into a fucking moat or something. Fuck that fucking guy. Not the actor. I'm sure he's great. He does a great job. He pisses me off properly. But fuck Cole, dude. Fuck him.
Speaking of fucking Cole, this is like a little bit of an aside, but earlier in the episode, actually right before he goes off on Sir Arik, I think, I'm pretty sure it's right before, Allison basically acts like she wants his attention again. And he's like, no, I'm not doing my, you know, he's like, I'm going to turn you away because like, I'm mad about myself and fine, whatever. But then this happens. He gets made Hand of the King, as far as I could tell. And P.S. It's like an aside of an aside. The timing in this episode was really weird. There's so much back and forth and I couldn't tell what was happening when. And like at one point I had something in my notes about like, wait, they're just now taking the bloody mattress out. how long has it been? And I think that was right before Coleslaw confronted Sir Arik, but I was like, wait a minute. So is it just the next morning? It seems like it's been like a week. I don't know.
I think it was a day. I think they mentioned it, that it was like a day or something like that. Or it was like the next day. And that's what I thought was like weird, because it was like, wait, but you guys just did all this stuff. And like the time seems weird on it. And you're right. The pacing and everything was just weird, because I came to like that same kind of thought where I was like, this must be like a week later and they're just taking this thing out. But I think somebody said it, oh, the events from yesterday or something like that. And I'm like, wow, you guys got a lot done in a fucking day.
Again, I think some of that was just the way they cut the episode two, with between the King's Landing stuff and the scenes in Dragonstone, and also the scenes with the Brothers of Hull and the Smith Hugh, which I'll get into why we aren't mentioning that later. Okay, so I'm glad you remember that, because I watched the episode twice and I was still very confused about like why it took them. But even if it was the next day, like, Christ, I know you were like questioning the servants and everything, but you had enough time to like have your fucking small council meeting and in the daytime have this parade through the streets with the body, and you still haven't taken, that should have been the first, you question the first servants and then you immediately send them up to the room to clean that shit up so Helena never has to see it.
It's not like they needed like a forensic detective to go in there and take a look at it, and they needed to leave the evidence as is. Clean that fucking shit up.
Yeah, they have dogs. That's what they have. Big, mean looking dogs sniffing things. That's, anyway, I hate complaining about this show, but the timing of this episode was very weird. Hot take number 7, farewell, my brother. We're calling this hot take Farewell My Brother because that is the name of a ballad composed by Lucian of Tarth. And I believe in the books, it's sung at like a feast or something. And I want to say Sansa is crying about it. But anyway, I'm going to again start this one off. This is a serious hot take, but I'm going to start this one off on a not so serious note, because is it just me, or did the fight between the twins seem almost like a comedy of errors?
It absolutely did. I was just waiting for that scene where they point at each other and be like, no, kill him. No, kill him. You know, like,
I don't think it was supposed to be amusing. And it wasn't really for me, especially because I knew how it would end. For a fight scene, I felt like it was very messy, and I hope that it was done on purpose that way. Like, I'm gonna believe that it was done on purpose, because otherwise it was just a badly fucking choreographed fight scene. They're knocking over vases and like, I don't know. It was just, comedy of errors. It being twins literally makes it a comedy of errors. If you know that Shakespeare play at all, I know it very well. I was in it. So,
I mean, I get what they were doing. It's very realistic in the sense of that's probably how a sword fight would be, like in a room. You know, like, how do you fight with swords in a room? There's things that you're going to bump into, and chairs and tables and vases and stuff like that. But with that fight, this is the one instance where I was like, you know what? I wish it was a little more dramatic. I wish they would have focused a little more on the drama there, because it is two brothers trying to kill each other when Eric kind of like falls on his own sword or whatever. I don't know. I'm glad they did it, because we didn't have to play the game. Well, wait a minute. Is he the real, you know, or is he the fake one? You know, we didn't have to go down that route, which I was really scared about. As soon as that fight started, I was like, oh my God, I hope it doesn't go down that path. It didn't, thank God. But again, when he falls on his own sword, it was just so unceremoniously. It just seemed like so wasted is what it was. And yeah, I think that whole fight was, I appreciate the chaos because that's what a sword fight would look like in the room. However, on an emotional level, it didn't really do anything for me. And even when Eric fell on his sword, it was like, okay, I guess.
This is where I'm gonna, again, this is something that now we've seen this fight, right? I already knew this was going to happen at some point. I figured after we had the Jaehaerys death at the end of episode one that it would be very soon. I'm not at all shocked it happened at the end of this episode. But in Fire and Blood, there's this whole explanation of how there's all these different accounts of the fight between the Carguyle twins. There's a Septon who just has it written down that they slew each other. That's it. This is very basic. According to the singers, aka like the reference in this hot take to the song Farewell My Brother, the twins professed their love for each other as they drew their swords. And then in the maester who wrote the text that Fire and Blood is supposed to be, Eric and Arik battled for like a really long time, like an hour or something. And it was obviously super noisy. It drew all sorts of people to the room because it was loud. But no one could tell which twin was which, so no one wanted to do anything. And they showed that, right? They showed that a little bit when the servant, Alinda, fetched Sir Laurent, and he was like, I don't know what to do. I don't know which is which. And of course, you don't want to kill your brother in arms, who's supposed to be like one of the Kingsguard for Rhaenyra. And then in that Grand Maester's version of the story, the two brothers mortally wounded each other and died in each other's arms, crying. And then there's the testimony of Mushroom, the fool that I mentioned in our last episode. He said the fight was like really quick and the brothers did not say they loved each other. They both called the other a traitor. And Eric, the one who was for Rhaenyra, actually, he struck the first mortal blow. Mm-hmm. So he killed his twin, Arik. And then as Arik was going down, he grabbed his brother, pulled him close, and stabbed him in the belly. So Arik was dead pretty quickly, but Eric took days to die. The whole time he was like screaming in pain and cursing his brother. And the reason I wanted to get into all this is because the scene was like a weird amalgamation of all of those. First, it's Arik, the King's Landing twin, who calls Eric, the Dragonstone twin, a traitor. But then later, Arik is choking Eric out and he's like, I love you, brother. But he's choking him out. But yeah, while the tales from the book do vary, none of them have Eric falling on his sword in the end. That was a new thing, which I will say, I think he knew he was probably going to die, right? He was fucking severely injured. And I guess I would rather have that happen. I don't know. It's like in his grief over the fact that he had to just fight and kill his twin brother, he decided he didn't want to face life anymore.
Yeah, when you think about it, his life is fucked at this point. Yeah. Because not only did he just kill his brother, but since there's no clear identifying marks between the two, he's never going to be trusted. Because no one's ever going to know whether it's actually him or not. Not that I would have killed myself, but I would have just been like, can I just hit the road and just take off for good somewhere else, some other land?
Yeah, it was weird because like Rhaenyra did seem to know him in the end, but then maybe I'm just like having that hope that she knew. It was a weird thing, yeah. But either way, like, I guess, I don't want to say I would rather that be the conclusion than Eric dying for 4 days and like cursing his brother the whole time. I'm not saying I disliked how things went, but what I will say is that I think that last season we were given a lot of more solid things. Are very vague in the book and we're going to clarify a thing. It wasn't always like 100% visually clarified, but things were so obvious that it was like, okay, well, now we know how this went. Now we know how that went. And I think they're being a lot more vague this season, which I'm not sure I love. And I think some of my feelings about that have kind of bled into my feelings about this scene, or maybe vice versa.
How I would have liked to have seen it gone if I was a writer. Come with me to the land of make-believe. And I'm going to tell you how this fight would have ended for me if I would have done it. Both of these guys are seasoned knights. Not only are they seasoned knights, but they know each other very, very well. So they fight and they fight and they wrestle around. Nobody can get the upper hand. This is just like a stalemate. No one's going to win, right? But Eric wants to protect the queen. So what he does is he like feints him or drops his guard so his brother can go in for the kill. And as his brother's going in for the kill, it leaves him open also. So he takes the charge and they both kill each other. And then they're like, man, that was a great tactic. They have those few words where it's like, hey, nice. And then they like fucking die. To me, I think that would have been fucking cool, right? Instead of just falling on your own sword, it would have been like the brother is making the sacrifice, right? He's still making the sacrifice there, but that's the only way that he can defeat his brother and protect the like queen, you know? So he's literally doing the knight's duty by doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. That's it.
The closest like book version to that is that they mortally wounded each other and died crying in each other's arms. It did really seem like Arik was a lot more angry with Eric than Eric was with Arik about the split. I don't know. Whatever. I guess it doesn't matter. They're both dead now. So rip Cargyles.
Rip Cargyles. That story's been told.
I think it's time for our favorites roundup.
Okay, the conversations with Bela and Jace. I just thought there was something that was just very homegrown about it. Two siblings, and they're just sitting there talking. But it was like a cool scene, you know, because you don't really get to see any of them like that. And she's out there shooting, you know, the little crossbow. And there's a scene where they're just kind of looking into the distance. And he's just like, I miss Luke. And it was just touching. It was just a very real moment.
That whole scene was one of my favorite things, too. It was just really adorable. I can't even. And on top of that, there was that bit between Bela and Rhaenyra. Rhaenyra had called for Bela. She sees her dad storming out. She sees Daemon storming out. She goes in, you know, you wanted to see me. Rhaenyra says, like, I want you to take Moondancer and kind of patrol King's Landing, stay high, don't let them see you, et cetera, et cetera. Just keep an eye on things. But at the end of their conversation, Bela kind of says, like, what about my dad? It's not how she words it, but you know what I mean? Very highly paraphrasing. Like, what about my dad? Yeah. And Rhaenyra is like, he has to follow his own path. And Bela, she doesn't really react much. She doesn't shrug. She doesn't, there's like almost no change in her facial expression. She just kind of does her little bow and leaves. And yeah. I thought that was a little bit, I was like, oh God, like, is this, what's going to come of this? But then.
Yeah, we've seen a split. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we have that really sweet scene between Jace and Bela where they're talking about numerous things. I love how Bela asks about Laenor, her uncle, and Jace has nothing but good things to say. And then she also asks about Sir Harwin. And it's like, we both know, but we're not making this a bad thing, right? In a way, Jace really did have two dads. And I think it's nice that Bela recognizes that without saying anything. Like, you know what I mean? But then, like, Bela makes a comment about how she kind of mad at her dad. I think she, like, she's like, sometimes I think I hate him, I think is what she says. That made me feel a little bit better about the interaction she had with Rhaenyra earlier. Not that that interaction said anything bad, like, obviously, but... Yeah. This scene between Jace and Bela seemed to clarify that hopefully there's not anti-Rhaenyra feelings because her dad stomped off, essentially. Yep. It might be the one bright spot in this episode, let's be real.
It was the one bright spot. And it was actually seemed to be the filmed in the most light as opposed to the entirety of the episode, you know? Like,
here's just two kids having a nice conversation. Speaking of, and I see what you're saying, and we're of a same mind because I know what the other thing you have in here is. But before we get into that, because we mentioned Daemon, I will say, great shout out to the Windy Boy.
Oh, yeah. No, fantastic. See, I was like, yes, finally. Yeah.
The brief scene with Adam of Hull on the beach where he sees the dragon, that was a really cool little scene. I just wish it hadn't been placed where it was in the episode because it made no sense timing-wise. Mm-hmm. If anything, I feel like they should have ended the episode with that.
Exactly.
I'm not going to get into why. And for anybody who's listening to this who reads the books, again, this is about not giving any information about things that haven't happened yet in the show that might exist in the books. So, I really think that scene of Adam of Hull on the beach gathering clams from the sand and just like seeing the dragon, like that would have been a way fucking nicer way to end this episode than fucking literally fucking.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Don't even get me started. Like smacking the shit out of coleslaw over here. Yeah.
Yeah.
That scene of Adam of Hull was an awesome, quick scene. It should have been at the end of the episode.
And this goes to one of the things that I put on here and the things that I like was some of the long, drawn out shots they did here.
Yeah.
There was a lot of like Rhaenyra when she's like playing with the kids and you see her just sitting there and it just kind of focuses in on her. And there's like these like pauses.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens in a few other scenes also. I can't remember which, but that was like one of them too with like the dragon. I don't know. There was something like majestic about it. There was something great. Emma D'Arcy. Can we just talk about how beautiful they are? Looking at their face, I was just like, man, it was just, I don't know, it was mesmerizing. It made my heart skip a few beats.
I usually am the type of person who hates the close-ups on faces and like the long like pans or like whatever. I do not like that sort of shit. Usually, I think in this episode, that stuff was actually perfectly timed. There was a lot of back-to-back with Rhaenyra and Alicent. That is one thing I will say. Normally, that is shit I do not like. And the fact that I really freaking loved it in this episode says a lot coming from me.
Yeah.
Whether or not anybody cares. What I think is neither here nor there. That's how I
feel. No, but it's true. Yeah. No, because look, with those long scenes like that, close-ups on the face and all this kind of stuff, it's going to go one of two ways. It's either going to be like kind of artsy or it's just going to fall flat and be boring and stupid. And I feel like with this episode, they did such a good job and they did it like so well because they did focus on a lot of up-close face scenes for some reason in this episode. episode. There was mm-hmm. a lot of that going on. And even with Helena, when she's in the cart, right? It like focuses in our face when she's like looking up. So yeah, I don't know if they had a different director this time around or what, but there was definitely kind of like a different style of filming with this, which I felt was really good. And honestly, a lot of that probably should have been in the first episode also, just mm-hmm. because it's kind of introducing this environment almost to what's going on. And it's that slow burn where it's like, you can almost hear what they're thinking in their head, or you know what they're thinking as it's just kind of focusing in on this stuff. And that's just fantastic by the way it's filmed and fantastic by the actors.
Just in terms of it being artsy, it was actually artsy. A lot of shows try to do this shit. Probably the best example I can give of this being done badly is The Walking Dead or Fear the Walking, like basically any of the fucking Walking Dead shows. They try to do this shit and it always just comes off as cheesy and stupid and like, please don't stop trying to be artsy Walking Dead. Not that Walking Dead hasn't been like deep at times, but now. In this episode, and also a lot of that has to do with the way they've done it, literally no complaints. And again, I do not like that shit usually, so when I say literally no complaints about them doing it in this episode, that is saying a lot coming from me.
If you do it right, like the boxing episode of BSG, right? When they're just, when this just has the music, that classical music playing, and they're fighting each other, and it's like slow motion and it's up close shots of people getting their face punched. Yeah, like that's totally artsy, you know, but it's done 100% fucking correct. And that's what they really pulled off with this episode. So I was definitely, when it comes to that, yeah, absolutely. I loved that. Okay, so Damon's showing his true colors. We kind of already touched base on that. The veil is off at this point. You can kind of see what kind of person he is or whatever. Is it surprising? Honestly, for me, it was a little bit. I guess technically I shouldn't have been surprised with it, but because of how invested I got into his character with it being so dynamic, that I feel with that, they're taking away that dynamic now.
Yep.
It's almost like they're dumbing down the character now. I don't like that because I like a character that's very three-dimensional, that is very dynamic and has a whole spectrum of feelings of what they think. It's pure chaos and I love it. Yeah, with that, I wasn't crazy with it. I think I already know which one you're going to disagree with here. So Reyes looking at Damon like she knows, that was, I mean, because I just love Reyes. I mean, she's just fantastic.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't disagree with that.
You know, she's just sitting there and just the way she looks over, if it had been me, I'd have just like looked away or put my head down like, oh, shit, she's got me. She has that grandmotherly thing that when I look at her, I'm just like, I know I'm in trouble.
Her and Corliss are talking shit about
which was another great scene, right? Because it just made them like really real, you know? And I was like, damn, hell yeah.
It was a great like quiet scene. To be honest, again, I know why they put it in this episode, but with the timing of it in the episode, I don't know. But especially after last week, I think I will always love some Rainey's talking shit about Damon.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. The windy boy, of course. It was great seeing him, dude. It felt like coming home. When I come home and my cat just comes out from under the table. Those were the feelings I got. I was like, oh, baby. Hey, come here, baby. Come here. I missed you. It was fantastic.
His little floppy legs.
His little floppy legs and his little head. And just like, I'm like, man, how do you even balance that thing?
He looked extra windy in this episode, honestly.
He did. He was very windy. Like, who's my windy boy? Come here, baby.
Caraxes would blow fire. He would you call me whiny boy.
Yeah. Exactly. Second to last one here. Rhaenyra's scene with Damon. I really appreciated that scene because it's just nice with, you know, Rhaenyra. You can see that she's, I don't know, man. There's like something powerful about her, but there's something vulnerable about her also. And she's losing her cool with like Damon because of what he did, you know? And this is like the same shit where she's pissed because she's trying to be a tactician also on top of this, you know, and trying to figure out how to like win the realm. And it's like, dude, I'm not going to win the realm if my husband is out killing babies. Of course, I'm going to be exactly what these people say I am. And it's like, what the fuck are you thinking? And honestly, if I was Rhaenyra, I would have handcuffed his ass and given him to the fucking Greens. And I'd have been like, look, we're fighting about this thing, about the throne, and we can fight about that. Absolutely. I don't believe in killing babies. I would have just handed his ass right over to him, right up to the gates. This is the one who killed your child. Right here.
Yeah, but that's she lurves him.
Yeah, I know. But I'm just saying that if my significant other kills some babies, it's like in that Star Wars Revenge of the Sith or whatever, and Anakin starts killing the younglings.
Yeah.
And like, because, you know, his wife is dying. Look, if my wife was dying, I'd be like, look, honey, I really want to save you. However, I ain't killing kids, man. I'm sorry. You're going to have to die. Okay. It's like if I was dying and then my significant other is like, oh, in order for me to save Manny, I got to kill babies. And if she kills babies and I live, I'm going to be like, oh, no.
Yeah, no. Bad.
No, like you should have just let me die, okay? So,
oh, also, oh my god, that's like a really fucking terrible meme, a Daemon and Anakin meme. Oh, I gotta figure out how to do that without it being super
dark.
That's the meme for this week.
Yep.
Shit.
Okay, so now the big one that we're gonna disagree on. Mm-hmm. Aemon being vulnerable.
So I don't disagree with liking that he was vulnerable. The scene itself just weirded me out. Him just like curled up in fetal position in what looks like a middle-aged woman's lap. Like I wrote in the summary, it felt very Oedipal to me. Obviously, this is not his mother, but she's got brown hair and she's much older. And to be fair, this woman looks quite a bit older than Alicent does. But yeah, the scene made me uncomfortable, not because Aemon was being vulnerable, because what he said, listen, he actually admitted from his own mouth that he regrets what happened, that he lost his temper, whatever. I like that. What I didn't like was the setting of the scene, I guess. Just like a personal thing. It made me uncomfortable.
It reminded me of, and maybe I'm just kind of theory crafting hard here, but it reminded me of the weird distortion that guys are raised with when it comes to love, as in sex, and affection, because it's both the same. We're not raised thinking like, oh, well, you can be affectionate, but that has nothing to do with sex. And so, in essence, all love means sex. And I know that wouldn't have been for that time in particular, but those kids are fucked up and they were raised in very fucked up situations, number one. But that's what it made me think of, because like as a dude and you grow up, you're just taught that you can't be vulnerable, you know, around them or anything like that. So when they get to that sense of vulnerability, instead of just being vulnerable as who they are, they become vulnerable as if they're the child is what it is, right? And they're going to their mom. You know what I'm saying? So to me, with the lady being the mom, and then, it's weird because, you know, he's naked and whatever. Whatever the hell, and I'm sure other stuff happened. That's where the fog is between those two sides of like a lot of men's brains, right? There's that fog. The lines are just not even that there's a blurred line. It's that it's the same soup, so that there's no way to like discern one way or another. So I guess with the scene and just understanding like what I grew up with and stuff like that, not that stuff was bad in my house or anything, but just in society, that's what it made me think of. Okay, I can see the like fucked up blurred line here. It comes off as vulnerability because that's how I recognize vulnerability when it comes to men, because it's always something weird like that. It's never just like, hey, feeling a little vulnerable today, right? Because we're conditioned from fucking birth that you just can't be vulnerable, period, right? You're the fucking guy. No vulnerability ever, ever, ever. And when you see the vulnerability finally come to like fruition in somebody, and maybe with his character, it's just like it's a weird breakdown. I don't know.
Well, and to be clear, like, dude, I love a vulnerable man. Some of my best guy friends and also my two best relationships have been with men who are completely unafraid to be vulnerable. But again, obviously not in this sort of manner, where to me it felt weird because like, dude, just like I will let any one of my femme friends cry on my shoulder, any one of my dude friends is also more than welcome to do the same, but maybe not like curling up in a fetal position naked in my lap. And particularly if I'm like my age and the person is like 20 years, well, and also that would be fucking weird if they were 20 years younger than me, because that'd be really fucking young at this point. I think part of it might be an age thing. And again, also, I think the biggest part of it here was like it felt like an Oedipal thing, not at all because of him being vulnerable, but because he's like curled up like a baby in the lap of a woman who doesn't look like his mother, but is like, to be honest, like more like a grandmother age. Like she looked older than Allison, but also still like brown hair. I don't know. My feelings on it are the vulnerability I am totally here for. The fact that the scene made me uncomfortable does not mean that I don't think that there wasn't a point to it, or that it wasn't well written or well shot or anything like that. Because the other thing about that is too, like, we're also talking about, this is me as a person, and some of the things that I'm uncomfortable with, somebody else might not be uncomfortable with. But just to be very, very fucking clear, the vulnerability is not the thing I have an issue with. Please, more men be vulnerable.
You know, and another thing that did drive me kind of weird about that scene was the gem in his eye. That just bothered me. It made my eye hurt. If I had the opportunity to like put a gem in my eye or wear an eye patch, I always go eye patch, always. Because eye patches instantly gets you like more tougher points, right? Because everyone is going to assume that if you lost your eye, it was like in a battle on a pirate ship or something, you know, like something like.
You just need that bionic eyeball that Rocket gives to Thor.
There you go. See, but even me, it's like, I wouldn't do that. It would be like, if I lost an eye naturally and they were like, Manny, we can grow you a new eye, I'd be like, nah, dude. I earn my bones right now so I can lose an eye and wear an eye patch. Legitimately, like, I'm going to wear the eye patch. I'm sorry. Grow me an eye later.
Have we covered everything? Any last thoughts? We have once again rated nothing except for the title.
Exactly.
And Targ eyebrows. So, okay, I will say 10 out of 10 Targ eyebrows for them showing a man being vulnerable. Minus 6 Targ eyebrows for the feelings I have about it being Oedipal. Episode as a whole, this is probably one of the lower ranking ones for me so far. Yeah. It felt very long, and not even because of like the artsy stuff. I really liked that stuff. It felt very long, and I think there was some stuff they shoved into this episode that was out of place. So the episode as a whole, maybe like 6 out of 10. And I'm not saying it was like a bad episode. I just also, I will say, like, my feelings on how good it was might change depending on what happens, particularly in like the very next episode.
And I think you're right about that. I think that's going to be key, because if they're doing buildup now, it's hard to rate a buildup episode because you have to see what the buildup is. And if the buildup is not good, then it's going to make the episode that maybe you like worse, because it's like, well, it led to nothing. So it's just pointless and worthless. So I think you're right about that. I would give it a 7, I think. 7 out of 10 Targ eyebrows, just because of the cinematic styles they used for filming. But that's really what pushed it to a 7 for me, was just because of the way it was filmed. I think whatever the buildup is going to be is going to either be the payoff, or it's going to be the, okay, they wasted our time. Because how many episodes are in this season? There's just 8, right?
8. Yeah.
8. So we have 6 left. You guys got to
We don't know. They're not releasing episode titles. They're not releasing episode lengths either, from what I can tell. So this episode was like an hour and 20 minutes long or something. And we didn't know what it was called till it was literally released. And we don't know what the next episode is called yet either, which I unfortunately feel is going to be a pattern this season. And before I conclude, like, one thing I will say is I was at I was at like a 5 or maybe like a 5.5 Targ eyebrows for how I felt about Damon. Like, he was pretty low on the Targ eyebrow scale, but then like gained a few eyebrows with the crown scene and whatnot. He's at like a 1 for me right now, maybe less. I don't, like, maybe 0.5, and I wouldn't round it up. I'd round it down.
Right there with you on that one.
But Otto, who I would have rated at like at best a 1 out of 10 Targ eyebrows, has gained. I would put Otto at like a 4, because he, as much as I didn't love some of like the things he was suggesting, he had some good suggestions in this episode. He also seemed to be listening to Alicent. She told him to go to the Tyrells. So unless we find out like immediately that he did not go to the Tyrells, then I'm going to assume he listened to her. It looked like he was going to take her suggestion to go to the Tyrells instead of going back to Old Town. And then also his like waxing reminiscent in like the most positive ways about Viserys. I really, I would give him like 4, maybe 4.5 Targ eyebrows. Yeah. No.
He got an increase and Damon got a massive decrease, but I don't know. It's like,
again, Team Green propaganda, man.
That's what it is. But the thing is that I don't know if that's how it was in the books or if he's just written different, and maybe they just like, because I always worried about that with this. When I watched season 1, because I know that I had mentioned this, where it's like, oh yeah, I love Rhaenyra and I love what's going on, but who knows, right? Because I don't, you know how these books are. All of a sudden these people are going to turn into the tyrants and be like, oh my God, I fucking hated you. You know what I'm saying? Like, what the fuck? I was all about Mother of Dragons, right? From like Game of Thrones. I was like, oh yeah, I loved her. And then she just fucking murdered innocent people left and right. And I was like, oh my God, no, what are you doing? You know, like, I can't be on your side anymore. You know, I can't, again, you're killing kids. Stop it.
The one thing I will say about that is the difference is that series, the books still aren't finished. And we know that George R. R. Martin gave them the major points of the ending. I'm not shocked that Daenerys turned out the way she did in the show, but they also did a shitty job. It wasn't a 180 because of course we saw her do shitty things earlier on, but it was just not done well. It was done too fast. It was too much. Right. Fucking D&D wanted to go make Star Wars. And guess what? They didn't get to.
Exactly. Exactly.
Whereas with this story, we do know how it turns out. The story is already written, but because it was written as like a history book, while that book does, in my opinion, and really like in reality, I think, lean a little bit Team Green, it's a lot more complacent about things. than the actual novels, the five, you know, Song of Ice and Fire series novels as we know them are. While I do know how things end so far, even when I say like, oh, I don't necessarily love how they did this one thing or whatever, like so far I'm happy with how they're handling it. And that's why I keep saying like, I understand what they're doing here. Like season one was Team Black hardcore, pretty much. Season two seems to be leaning Team Green. It's hilarious for us to call it Team Green propaganda. And I'm not going to stop that.
No.
So
I think what worries me, I think the worry that I'm coming to after this episode is because I don't know how much material is in those history books and what they're trying to do with the show, right? So I'm just kind of guessing. You would know, but I'm kind of guessing that what I'm worried about is that
I wouldn't even say I know. There's some guessing on my part too.
Yeah. So what worries me is that I don't know how much material is actually left. And when House of the Dragon came out for the first season, I mean, it exploded. Everybody was kind of done with Game of Thrones. Like, I mean, after that terrible ending from the main line series, but everybody loved House of the Dragon. Like, it fucking exploded. I loved it. I mean, you guys can listen to it. You can go back and listen to me talk about it. Like, I mean, I was just so into it that I'm worried that they're like, hold on, guys, we don't have enough material to keep this cash cow going. So we're going to start stretching things out a lot. So maybe we can squeeze another season or two out of it. And that's what I'm kind of worried about, because I would rather have 8 episodes of complete chaos and great storytelling than them give me 3 or 4 more seasons of just kind of like the way these episodes kind of are.
It's definitely already been renewed for season 3. Shocker. Ha ha ha. I know. What I know from like what I've heard the creator say in the past is that he wanted at least 4 seasons of 10 episodes. But that said, while this season is only 8 episodes, if they continue to be lengthier, could they do it in 4 seasons with this and the next 2 being 8? I think so. But I don't think they're going to stretch it out. But I do think it's getting enough hype and enough people are watching it that I really don't think there's going to be an issue with us getting a story that is like fully fleshed out. Like, I do still think they're doing that. And I think the fact that this episode was, like you said, it's a buildup episode, right? The premiere had to be what it was. Like, we needed big things to happen. And it's okay that this was a more buildup episode. While I disagree with like how certain things were cut in terms of like where certain scenes were, I didn't dislike this episode as a whole.
No.
And I only rated it as quote unquote low as I did at a 6 because I think they did a crappy job cutting some things.
I agree with that. Yeah, because it is cut weird and you're absolutely right about that.
All right. Well, as we close out the episode, just want to give a shout out to our Here's to Your patron, Tommy of the TKOK Podcast Network. Thank you so much for supporting us. And thank you to our listeners for joining us for Hot Tea Takes. Manny and I will be back next week to cover season 2, episode 3, Title Unknown. Yet again, and I feel like that's going to be a pattern this season. Oh, well. Yep. For the most current news and updates about this series, make sure to follow A Geek Saga. That's at A Geek Saga on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, Twitter. But also, please consider backing our Patreon at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Geek Saga podcast. If you like what you heard, please check out other Geek Saga entertainment endeavors, including the Sagas and Sass webcast and podcast, and Ice and Fire Con.